Hey leaders, in this episode of Leading Collaborative Response, Lorna and I are joined by members of the leadership team of Joan Carr Catholic Elementary Junior High School in Edmonton, Alberta, who will be sharing what collaborative response looks like in their school and lessons learned along the way, including the impact of a little something they refer to as TLC. So let's get started.
Leading organizations with intentionality and purpose is complex work. And dedicated leaders work tirelessly each and every day to build impactful cultures of collaboration. But effective collaboration is difficult and messy. The good news is you don't have to do it alone. Join the Jigsaw Learning Team for Leading Collaborative Response, sharing insights for leaders committed to establishing, refining, and deepening collaborative response in their organization.
And welcome
to
leadership team at Joan Carr Catholic Elementary Junior High School. So great to have you be able to join with us and share some of your insights around the work that is happening within your own school. So to start us off, why don't we have each of you take a moment to share who you are, a little bit of your educational background and your role at the school. Darren, can I turn it over to you first to start us off?
Sounds good. Thanks, Curtis, for having us and for, you know, sharing our story as well, our journey. My name is Darren Forge, and I'm a principal for, I think this is my 17th year. Worked in inclusive education at the district level for a year, but missed the school environment, so I came back to a principal role. Been in a variety of situations in terms of demographics, so schools with high English as a second language. And this is the third school I've opened for the division. We're in year two at Joan Carr here. Yeah, and I think that's basically sort of the summary of my journey and a real passion for curriculum and, of course, for inclusion. And the collaborative response approach has been an integral part of all three schools that I've opened.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Why don't we go to right beside you, Shanley?
I'm Shanley. I'm one of the assistant principals here at Joan Carr. This is my 21st year in education, and I've taught for multiple divisions and P all the way to 12, everything in between, and just feel really excited and passionate about the collaborative response model, as well as inclusion and also inquiry learning. It's a lot of my background.
Awesome. Thanks, Shanley. And why don't we go to the other side, Maureen?
Hi, I'm Maureen Corcoran. I'm one of the learning coaches here, and I've been in the learning coach role for the last 6 years and been part of the collaborative response model when you came to Edmonton Catholic and started piloting in one of the pilot schools that got to do that. So I've been involved with collaborative response for a while too.
Awesome. And Michelle.
Hi, my name's Michelle. I've been in the education system for 22 years now. My 7th year as an assistant principal. I was here for the opening of Joan Carr School last year. I've had experience with lots of English language learners and sometimes as an ESL consultant as well. Again, I'm very passionate about the inclusive environment, and it's been great to be part of it and the collaborative response approach as it's been unfolded here at Joan Carr School.
Awesome. Well, we are definitely honored to have a chance to speak with all four of you about the work as it is existing at Joan Carr, but why don't you tell us a little bit more about the school as far as student population, some demographics, and then we're going to launch into a little bit deeper understanding of what collaborative response looks like at the school. So please share a little bit more about the school context.
You can do rock, paper, scissors about who ends up.
Yeah, so we opened at about 380 students, but last year one of our sister schools fairly close by in the West End. They are well over capacity, so they have had, I think it was almost 1,400 students, and their school can only hold 950. So they have bused some students from the West End, which has more than doubled our population. So we are now at 804 students.
After 2 years of existence, right?
2 years of existence, and a lot of buses on a regular basis. But with that came a huge increase in our students with diverse needs. And so we think we're having, at this point, it's, I think, 34 students coded with ASD, with on all ranges of the spectrum in terms of supports that are needed. And I think to the ELL piece, I'll let Michelle, because we also have a very high ELL population as well.
Yeah, we do. We have about 110 coded English language learners this year. And we also have a large influx of beginner ELLs. So we have a number of students from Ukraine who are here who are coming to us with little to no English. That's a little bit different than it was last year where we maybe had one or two beginners. We have an increase in beginners this year as well.
And Shannon, can speak to the number of students with diverse needs that we have.
Yeah, so we have about 70 or so students that have inclusive coding. Everything from, you know, learning disabilities to low cog, ASD, obviously, ADHD. And so those are across all of our grade levels, K to 8.
Okay, so busy place with a lot of needs, and we're anxious to be able to talk about how you've gone to support that. But before we go there, I'd love to turn to Darren. Darren, you and I have known one another for a number of years now and in a number of different capacities, as you mentioned, through multiple schools and your district role as well. Can you just share a little bit of your background in relation to collaborative response through each of those different contexts?
Yes, we began when I opened Corpus Christi in 2017. We started that process there in the first year. And as you know, Curtis, when you came in, we've learned a lot of lessons that and mistakes that we made along the way. But through that journey and that growth, we basically fine-tuned that model by the third year, where we even had our junior highs involved in the process. And that opened the doors for us to really address many of our students. Again, a similar demographic, large number of students with diverse needs, large English as a second language population. And then when I moved into the online role, that was a little more challenging. We all remember that went with COVID and the growth and that we are, but we did. We managed to produce an online collaborative response approach that was very much appreciated by our online teachers. And that process, again, was a learning process along the way, but the information we gathered, particularly with the students that were online, we discovered a number of students with high anxiety, a number of students online that were not attending. So that collaborative approach really targeted it with intentional focus. So we were able to address those students that were not coming to the online classrooms and to actually supply some supports at the division level for those students that were experiencing, you know, high anxiety or, you know, areas like that that just needed some growth. And then this is year two of the collaborative response approach. Last year, we did our best to kick it off, but as opening a new school has many other facets that are involved with that. So we got the ball rolling last year, but, you know, to be honest, it was the beginning phases. So as we'll discuss later this year, we feel we have a much more solid approach to the collaborative response model. And we feel that we are doing a really good job of covering the layers as well.
We'll actually
jump right into that, because there are, as you know, in collaborative response, key component are those collaborative structures and processes, and really thinking about, you know, that huge influx of students that you've had, how do you address those layers of teams in terms of time and the teams themselves? How do you create that opportunity for people to get together with very intentional purposes?
Well, because we had the increase in students with special needs, we also, of course, increased our multidisciplinary team as well. So that more than doubled. And so we had to, of course, and Shanley and all of our support team to talk about the process that we had to really refine in order to identify and begin that. Because we have so many multidisciplinary team members, we had to really triage and create caseloads. But if you take a step back, one of the first things we did was we've been making a regular meeting time for our school support team, which consists of us as well as our social worker and our emotional behavioral specialist. And at that level, we're able to look at the strategies needed for the tier three and four supports that some of our students are needing. There are quite a large number of students. We're discovering that many of our families are struggling. And so that having that social worker here, as well as the emotional behavioral specialist, has been a key component in supporting our families, particularly at the higher end of the pyramid.
So if someone could share, how often does that team meet? Well, how long does it look? What does that structure look like?
So that team meets every time that the more universal collaborative, that tier two piece, every time that team meets, then the tier three will meet very shortly after, within about a week, and also in between. So because those students, obviously, often there's very dynamic situations that are happening and changes that are happening. So we try to kind of get our tier three to-do list in a way, or, you know, what it is we need to focus on, as well as what students are needing to add or, you know, be discussed on issues. That comes out of the tier two meeting.
Okay. And so then how frequently are your tier two, your collaborative team meetings happening? And what are the teams? Like, how do you put people together within the school?
So the collaborative team meeting level, that happens approximately every 6 weeks. And that is composed at this time of just the grade levels.
Okay.
So that one of us, because we do that on a Thursday afternoon, we were able to free up time during the day last year, but because we have five kindergartens and five grade ones, and there's only four of us.
Yeah.
So we had to shift it over to a dedication of a Thursday afternoon. And those meetings have one of us present, and they happen simultaneously, right? So then we're able to flip to all of our grades right up to junior high in an afternoon and get that covered. Like I said, at the school support level, that's this team, and as well as the EBS and the FSLW. And that's approximately every 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
A little more frequent when we just got to know our first round of kids. We really opened another school. More than the kids we actually had currently in the first year. So we had another, you know, load of students to know. So then those meetings were sometimes formal, informal, because we were discovering things, you know, students that we knew and identified that were not showing signs of needing adjustment. And then there were students that we didn't know about that were slowly making their way onto our lists of supports that were needed.
Yeah, so lots of challenges in the growth of your school. But when I think about the collaborative team meeting structure that you have in place, you talked about that idea that each of you are part of the leadership. You make sure that there is a leader in each of those teams that are coming together. Tell me why you feel that's important, because obviously that's been a little bit of negotiating to try to create time there for that many teams.
I think having an administrator or you know, a learning coach, just one of us who is in leadership in those meetings, really allows us to have an ear to the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, really understand who, you know, our teachers are as professionals, and also, you know, what they're thinking about, what are their common challenges, you know, and just really hear their contributions, which are so valuable to one another, and really find ways to support that team, I think, as a whole. And also just to build, you know, those norms, especially, I think, as a way that those teams function not only within the collaborative response model, but also in those more informal, you know, relationships, is a really important piece. And I think it's a way that the administration can really support and also really listen to how our kids are doing and also how our teachers are doing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when we opened Corpus, we did our best in that first year when we were freeing our teachers so they could collaborate. There wasn't an administrator present, and it sort of fell to the learning coach And that was done with the best intentions, because we were the ones, the administrators, were covering blocks so that those teams could meet. And obviously that wasn't the best approach. We discovered that fairly quickly. We had a Microsoft document that ran back and forth. So we would jump in, make our comments as to what the team talked about, but it's just not the same as being there and being present. And, you know, you do the best you can. And so anyone out there who's, you know, looking to start that model, just remember that it is a little dirty. It's a little dirty, a little messy, but you know, you grow from those mistakes and you quickly realize, okay, this is what we now have to shift to.
So before we move into how you're managing, as you said, some fairly diverse needs within the school, I'd love to turn to Maureen. And you've had the opportunity to see this work now in a couple different school settings as well. How do you think your teachers are feeling about the collaborative team meeting structure specifically? What's been some of the feedback or observations that you've made in relation to that structure?
I think for sure this year, because we've grown so much and because we inherited all these kids from the other school and the bulk of the kids were K to three, there's so many more teachers in those lower grades. It really gives them an opportunity to be together and be sharing and bouncing ideas. And again, we're in a unique situation in that everybody here was new, not just the kids.
Yeah.
We were also all new. So getting to know your grade partners is easy when there's just two of you. But when there becomes four of you or five of you, there's a lot more collaboration that needs to happen. And in this opportunity, they're given that opportunity. And then they get to see also like the two people, one admin and me or one of the other MDT team, with them listening to their ideas and their thoughts and their concerns. And so I think it brings value to that. And then they get to hear each other's ideas. And so far, it's been nothing but positive.
Oh, that's so good. And it provides that feeling that, yeah, they're not alone.
So what have been some other, when we talk about collaborative response, of course, we know the collaborative structures and processes, the creation of teams are important, but we also talk about trying to inform those conversations through data and evidence and the development of a continuum. Do you want to speak to any of that work, if you've had a chance to engage, as again, you're still in some of the starting steps
as a
school themselves, and we are leading towards a very specific structure that you have in place. But before we get there, tell us a little bit more about data and evidence and continuums.
Yeah, I think last year for sure, Maureen and Michelle, and they can, you know, jump in at any point, they had began to create a larger profile of our students, and in that, within that profile, you had your, you might have columns for EAL, you got, you know, columns for reading levels, like IPPs, goals, all the way up through that profile. Do you want anything
else? Yeah, as we started the year, I was hired as a lead teacher prior to school starting. So literally Darren and I sat down and cold call schools. We were just calling other learning coaches, you know, calling teachers to see about kids we were getting, because you're just reading a piece of paper of what a code looked like, but you don't know. And trying to make class lists was very interesting. And then move forward into adding 400 kiddos or close to from another school. I went and visited there twice, met with their learning team as well. And then again, Darren and I sat down and made class lists as best we could, adding their kids to our class list that our teachers here had made. So it was a very interesting kind of piece. And then add Shanley into the mix, and she came as a new administrator and had a really great idea and moved forward. Her and I spent a day making a new profile, adding all the new kids in. So I'll let her talk about that.
Yeah, so I think with any, you know, situation where there's so many diverse needs, we really looked at it as, how do we help our kids gain skills? That was our focus. Mm-hmm. In a way, you know, changing from who needs a one-to-one or who needs, just simply who needs help, but really asking, what are the skills that our kids need? And so that was our focus when we built a referral process. So teachers were offered a form that they could fill in, and it was a reflection tool that they used in order to be transparent about what UDLs they were using in the classroom in order to support that child. And then we would get the form on our end, and Marlene and I sit down with each of the referrals. There's about 180 of them right now. And we go through each of the columns and see what is it that this child, you know, what are the skills they need, or what is it the skills that the teacher also needs? And then who in our building fits within that need? So is it a behavior consultant? You know, is it our speech and language team? And then we look at those individual caseloads of our MDT team and then put students into there. And sometimes that student doesn't make it to the caseload. Sometimes it's a conversation with the teacher of how can we support you with the UDL? Can we get a consultant in your language programming? You know, Michelle, obviously, maybe there's the ELL component there that Michelle can support. And so it really became a more broad-based, you know, team effort, including our teachers, in order to make sure that we understood who needed what. And then from there, we just started to build caseloads and schedules. And out of that, we realized that there was a more efficient way, which was really concentrating certain students who needed very concentrated skill set and making sure that they were grouped together cross grade so that they could work off of their IPP goal.
Awesome. So I think you're leading us right to something that we prefaced at the beginning of TLC. And so if you could share with those that are viewing or listening to the podcast, what is TLC? How did it come about, its early genesis, and how does it connect to your overall collaborative response work in the school?
You could talk about how it came to be. Well, we kind of know with the funding, that's always a challenge in school boards. And, you know, we're looking at, you're doing more with less. And so we had to look, knowing what we were facing. And I tried to do this at Corpus in 2017. I proposed this model, and it didn't fly with inclusive education. But, you know, you try again. And given the circumstances where we had to look at a way that you could never one, if you needed the actual, let's say, people or body human resources, it would be way over what would be allocated for funding for each of the schools. So what we did was look at ways in which we could have a number of students through the TLC model, a number of students still get targeted intervention for periods of time, have that connection with Marlene because she's actually looking, and there's also the multidisciplinary team, and there's at least one in there, sometimes two in the classroom. And they're going through periods of time where it's really based on their IPP goals, which allows us to group students. You know, it doesn't really matter about grade. It's really more about the goals. That's a really important feature of it. And it just gave those students that might have either one fallen through the cracks or may not have gotten that support, particularly students in a cluster, because we know that students in a cluster sometimes one student dominates the cluster. And so then the other student or two students may not get that really good support that they need as well. So we had to figure out a way to make sure that those students in a cluster, all of those students in the cluster, were receiving the proper supports that they needed in order for them to succeed.
So tell us a little bit more about what that day would look like for what you've referred to as TLC, which stands for Targeted Learning Classroom. Am I correct?
Yes.
Describe what that would look like for a student that's engaging in that targeted learning classroom.
We'll be right back to continue this episode.
We have all felt like this before when engaging in team meetings, feeling like our time is not being maximized or that this could have just been an email. As a leader, how can we ensure this is not the reality for everyone in the room? Rather than just simply coming together into a shared space, we really need to ensure that whenever we are engaging as a team in meetings, that the time is being utilized to its utmost, and that we are truly seeing impact as a result of our conversations. My name is Curtis Hewson, lead learner and co-founder of Jigsaw Learning. In this free on-demand webinar, I'm going to be sharing with you 5 planning considerations and then 5 facilitation considerations that you can put into place as a leader to take your team meetings to the next level. Access this webinar, and in addition to these 10 considerations, numerous free resources will be shared that you can begin using immediately. I can't wait to have you join me to learn how we can ensure that team meetings are having their optimal impact.
And now back to our conversation.
So the classroom itself is a classroom. It's also a space where kids come for sensory break or movement or time to have if they need a break. So while we're teaching in there, there's also movement in and out. The kids in the morning, the kids that come in the morning are all kids that I work with the TASLs, which is our speech team. So, and that's evolved as well. I'll talk about prior to Christmas and then now, as of January, we've already changed it. It's moving all the time and changing, but basically it's the kids that were on that original caseload that are on a AEC device, limited language, and need that intense speech support. So I do some of the teaching and start the lesson, and then we break off into groups. So I'm always in there with the TASL, usually one and sometimes two. Then in the afternoon, the time is we have an occupational therapist to support. So that person and myself, and then for about 45 minutes. And then later on in the afternoon, it's behavior. Kids that require that intense behavior support with a behavior person, either a behavior support person or our actual emotional behavior specialist and myself. So it's always a teaching lesson. So I'm the teacher part of that. And then they're there with the supports.
To be able to address the particular area of need within the students that are coming. So you had mentioned before that the targeted skills that you're working toward within that classroom are part of their IPP goals as well. Like, that's really where you're focusing that time. I love that idea that this becomes very direct and intentional with their IPPs, because we know sometimes those IPPs are a plan that just is designed and doesn't ever get actualized. And this is a real way that you've identified student needs and then be able to really draw that forward, including the specialized supports that you have available to you. That's a super exciting model.
And so, like you said, students can flow in and out of that classroom. It's not that it's this a segregated classroom that you are just they're flowing back and forth from the classroom to this to back to the classroom.
Yeah, and then the groups are ever changing. Prior to Christmas, we were just grouping the kid, trying to make sure that if students are in a cluster, that the support person doesn't come to TLC group. Yeah. So let's say there's 2 students in the same grade that both need support, then the educational assistant can stay back with that student while the other one comes. So we target the support while they can help and support that other student by themselves or the other students in the classroom. So we're managing it on our own without those supports in place. And so that, as we got to know the kids and what their needs were, then I have to rearrange the groups, of course, because I see some kids are reading and some kids still don't know their alphabet. So now we got to rearrange things up. So now we've rearranged everything starting this in January again. We've lengthened the length of time they're there, and now more of a center-based approach where I'm a small center doing some letter identification or whatever they need, whether it be predictable chart writing. I'm determining that with the small group I have. And then partway through, I switch and they go see the speech person and do something there. So far, it's been really going well, other than they keep looking to see what the other group is doing. But now they're going to come and see us. And then we stop partway through for a movement break, and we have a movement break at the end, which they look forward to. And on the occasion we had yesterday, somebody say, I want to go back to class. And so we let him go. It's not there to be, I mean, we have a plan for the hour, but if it's too much and you're ready to go back, some kids
are, you know, they need to be with their teacher. And that was okay. So we let them go back. And so it's ever changing. And the same, we also support the teacher assistant break times in that room. So all the kids are back together. If their support person needs their coffee break or their lunch break. So the kids are also, we're seeing great things with the kids working together and seeing each other and looking for their friends and from different classes. So that's been kind of an added bonus to it, but it's great. It's working really well.
That's awesome.
I just wanted to add one of the original questions was about the data and research that we're using and the really important research that this kind of had been birthed from is a report from Autism Canada. And the research was from autistic people themselves. And we've really taken some of those core findings, and that's kind of where our inclusive model has come from, is really trying to respond to what autistic people have said themselves that they need. And that is time with other neurodivergent people, time to have autonomy, that when they want to be included in a certain situation, a social situation, they can have the autonomy to include themselves or not. Those, you know, those skill builds of communication and regulation, right? And having time to have, you know, passions and preferences. And so we've really tried to build the TLC, you know, model and the inclusive model around what, you know, neurodivergent people are sharing that they really want an experience.
Well, and to me, hearing this, it really does speak to the mindset we talk about of collaborative response. It's how do we create that ethos of we're going to shift and change as we determine how best to collaboratively respond to the needs of our students. And this is a perfect example of that. So I do want to pose out to all four of you to be able to respond to finishing this statement for us. As a result of collaborative response in our school, we have seen. How would you go about finishing that statement?
I think I would say that we've seen a shift from, you know, these are my students to these are our students, and a collaborative approach in problem solving and working together to meet their needs.
Nice. How about else?
Yeah, I would say that we have lots of more people with that idea of we're all in this together and all hands on deck. There's so many times people see us in the hallway even and just like, do you need help or what's going on? And knowing even the student's name. Lots of the people knowing, you know, the teachers knowing the students that need extra support to get on the bus even, or just those little things of knowing each other's kiddos. I think it's really changed.
And we have, and I can never remember the name of that book, ASD, that has all the tools and environment.
It's evidence-based environmental, yeah.
Yeah, it's evidence-based, yeah.
Yeah.
We can send the name of the book, but that evidence-based piece with ASD, and it's so well done. It looks at the environmental component, the relationship piece of it. So that also streams in nicely with the collaborative approach, because the teachers are looking at their classroom in the lens of how can we ensure that all students in this classroom have the ability to learn. So what barriers can we remove in order for our students to succeed, right? So we know through our work with our teachers that we have a really good handle on the environmental piece. We have so that's making sure there's a variety of furniture, that there's, you know, headphones for students that need that there are sensory items. Like, that's just the norm here. It's different is normal, right? It's just normal. And by also that whole relational piece too, where we're trying to really ensure that our teachers are connected to their students and not just the educational assistant, that you're there to support and program. That is your job as a teacher, is to support and program for that student. It's not the educational assistant's job to do that. They're not versed in curriculum, right? So also creating that confidence for our teachers as well, that they do actually have the strategies. And if they don't, they can seek support through the MDT. Or what we have found, of course, in the collaborative team meetings is they're actually seeking the strategies that may be stopping one teacher is evident and practiced with another. And that real sense of collective efficacy is a huge part of what I feel has been successful with the school.
And Stanley, how about you? How would you respond to that statement?
I think that it really actually has caused an empowering effort where that tier two layer allows them concentrated time that they're supported in really focusing on instructional concerns. You know, and that's often how teachers feel that they are most competent in, and they feel passionate about that and excited, right? And so, you know, when we have those other layers, the tier three and the tier four, and we also have the tier one where we know these are our norms across the board of our UDL practices or what we know will be the same in a kindergarten classroom versus a grade eight classroom. You know, and just really knowing that as a team that we're also supporting them, I think it allows them to be empowered in the instructional practices that they have, because all of the other layers that they worry about, the behavior, the speech, the communication, the families, all of those things are supported by specialists in that area through a really concrete, method and model. And so it really gives them the freedom, I think, to be focused on good instruction. And that good instruction prevents a lot. It prevents a lot of behaviors, right? It allows kids to feel connected and settled. And it also often addresses some of the concerns, even in a family.
Yeah, for sure. And just creating that solid foundation to begin with is important in how we serve students as those needs increase as well.
So a question we always like asking on these podcasts, generally, as we approach the end of the conversation, is this particular question. In the spirit of, if you knew then what you know now, what advice would you give to your past self in relation to the collaborative response work? And again, we'd like to pose that to each one of you, recognizing the what I knew then might be different based on your different experiences as well. How would you respond? What advice would you give your past self in relation to collaborative response?
We'll be right back to continue this episode.
When we establish continuums of support for our school focused on established priorities, we are answering the question of what will we do when faced with questions of how to support the needs of our students. But the creation of these continuums are only the first step. Join us for the online workshop, 10 Considerations When Utilizing and Refining Your Continuums of Support, part of our Support and Collaborative Response series. In this on-demand workshop, I will share 5 ways to effectively utilize your continuum of supports within your school, and 5 ways to further refine your continuums to ensure maximum impact. I'll also be sharing numerous resources, templates, and samples. Access this on-demand workshop and you'll have the ability to view and replay all or any portion of the workshop when it best fits your time. Register today to learn more about refining and utilizing your continuum of supports, an integral part of a school's collaborative response.
And now back to our conversation.
Well, we got to stick to a timer. The timer piece is key to me.
Awesome. Thanks, Marlene. For anyone else?
I think I've had, the implementation piece be in 2 sites now. And in both sites, I've really been affirmed to be consistent. That, like anything else, it can be shoved off of the to-do list because of the other things become the priority. And to really go back to those basics of, if we have this as the priority, those other things will work themselves out.
Yeah, great advice.
I guess, like Shalmi said, be consistent. The patient, I think, with the process, it takes time to unfold. It looks different at every site. And something that we started here that's new to me is having meetings that are focused in terms of, we had like social emotional learning as our last focus. So when teachers come, they're coming with those types of concerns. And so our next meeting will focus on literacy or whatever it might be. But yeah, I'll just say consistency and patience. It's really wonderful to see teachers working together. And when they feel supported, they're happy. And it's just really,
it's been a great experience here because when we started, we knew we were building school culture, and we really wanted to get it right the first time. And so it's been great to see teachers and MBT and EAs, and everyone just work together for the good of one another and for our students.
Awesome. And how about for yourself, Darren?
Yeah, it's the structures. It's really ensuring that even the what you think might not be important, like the roles, we're discovering at our last meeting how really important those roles are, and really sticking to the agenda, sticking to the roles, also having that meeting available on screen as and the notes are, you can see things as it's going there, like that is definitely important as well. As we all know, like, and again, those early learnings, you know, we would often come out with a to-do list and teachers didn't have anything to do, right? But if you keep it structured and you focus really on the tier two area, then teachers will come out with things to try. And that's one thing we're noticing is really positive is that they're walking away with a, yes, I'm going to try this. And when we come back, right? So they have a focus. They're eager and willing to try. And often it's something that it's something that one of their grade mates or an MDT person, you know, has given them, you know, that strategy. So it's come within. And so they begin to realize that it's inside of me. It's inside of my peers. It's not something that is foreign and out there and theoretical. It's actually right within your building, within your grade group, within the person next door.
Well, and I think that really attributes to how do you access and maximize what you would have of centuries of teaching experience and working with students when you look at it collectively in your school.
Knowing you have the expertise in the room.
Yeah. So with that, we want to say thank you so much for taking the time to join and would love to give you an opportunity for any final thoughts or last words that you can share out before we give our thanks for the team at Joan Carr joining us today. Any final thoughts?
Send it all.
It's a really wonderful model. It's worth the work and it's worth the mistakes and it's worth the time. It really is a game changer for our culture.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the approach, with the collaborative approach, it really is an approach, you know. It's we use the word model or program sometimes, and we were thinking with our targeted learning classroom, we were, you know, how are we going to form all these families? We don't want them to think that this is a program and a separate classroom. But when we looked at that, we think, okay, we know that you had that journey of moving from a model to an approach. Mm-hmm. That's how we looked at our targeted learning classroom in the same way. This is an approach. It's not a model. It's not a program. It's not prescriptive, right? So our parents, it's not like we have to inform them. This is supports we're providing for them in a different manner. So I don't want our parents to feel like their kids are excluded, or they're in a special classroom. So this isn't a model. It's not really a program. It's an actual approach that looks at some flexible ways to ensure that targeted learning is happening, intentional strategies are being given. And that's just a natural thing for a school to do and for teachers to do and for support people to do and not put a label on it.
All right. Well, with that, thank you so much for joining us. And more importantly, thank you for the great work that you're doing for your students, your staff, and your community at Joan Carr. It's been an absolute pleasure and we wish you all the best. Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing your journey and for all four of you to come and join us. That was fantastic today. So thanks so much.
Thank you for your support. Thanks for having us.
So that was a great visit again. We are so privileged to be able to join people in this work. And at Joan Carr, I just think about all the challenges that they have faced and thinking about the doubling of the even the population of their school from 400 to 800 in a year.
They basically went from opening a school 1 year to essentially opening another school the following year. Okay, so what are some key learnings that come out of this for us? One of the things that I loved, a statement that was made, was the idea of different is normal.
That's actually what
we're building. And that idea of we're constantly evolving and changing as we determine how best to collaboratively respond. And that idea of different is normal really captures really that what we're trying to accomplish through this work of it's going to shift, it's going to change.
And... Well, and based on unique needs of every person, knowing that, you know, you hear me often talk about that jagged profile. And that's what that is about, is that we each have unique strengths and challenges, no matter what the situation is, and that it's good for us to be different, mm-hmm. and that we just address the needs. And that was one thing that really stood out to me in our conversation just now, is that idea of we're looking at who needs help.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily about a code or a label, or it's just...
Or a program like this.
Yeah.
Right?
Who do we have in our building that needs help? And that's not just about students. It's about staff as well. And how do we help you to support the needs of your students? So it's about being able to identify who needs help.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that really intentional focus on our students,
yeah,
not my students or your students, yeah, I think is really important. And they have such an awesome opportunity to create a culture from the ground floor up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah. What a great culture that you can build when there's 800 students, but they're our students all together.
Yeah. Another thing that really stood out to me was Darren talked about, you know, the structural components that they have been implementing through collaborative response. And really, a lot of them really don't seem that important.
Yeah. The roles, the projecting, the agenda. All of that.
But with the large school that they're in, they talked about how important those little things are in establishing a culture. And you heard them talk about the fact that they are working to create that collaborative culture. And that happens through some of those small structural components that are encouraged.
Well, and they mention norms, they mention roles, yeah, they mention agenda, yeah, all these things that we talk about around that. You know, it's interesting, and we heard it from them, but we hear this across the board when it comes to really starting to see the impact of collaborative response in relation to confidence of teachers and empowerment.
Yeah.
Of how do we create an empowerment of we can make a difference for our students, and really focusing on, as mentioned, that development and reinforcement of collective efficacy within the building.
But I think that happens, and you know, that was really evident in this conversation, is that it happens when we can clearly identify those levels of support, mm-hmm. that we provide, and then through those levels of support, we empower the team to be able to do the work that they need to do. Mm-hmm. And there is a beautiful balance between that idea of empowering people to do the work, but alongside of we've got lots of levels of support to help you along the way too.
Absolutely. So each one of them spoke about introducing collaborative response within a new school. So we'll ensure in the show notes that we pop in an article that we've created around the top 10 considerations when establishing or getting started with collaborative response in the school. It may provide some entry points for you if you are at that beginning stage. We also, as always, will include a code to receive 10% off on our book. And we would love, as Shanley mentioned, being able to hear the podcast, other episodes and the value. We'd love for you to be able to share this podcast with a friend, someone who you feel, with a colleague that you feel would benefit from hearing the conversation, as well as the resources that are available as well. So once again, thanks to the leadership team at Joan Carr for sharing the great work that is happening. And as always, thank you for joining us as listeners and viewers as well. We love the opportunity to be able to share and interact. So until next time, take care.
See you soon.
Join us again to continue to build your own capacity and leading collaborative response in your context.